Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Thanks for calling the Midnight Drive-In. No one is here to take your call. The movies this week are Tucker and Dale versus Evil and The Cabin in the Woods. Just in time for hunting season. For more info, check out the Midnight Drive-In on Twitter at @MNDriveInPod or find us on Facebook. If you want to email us, send it to themidnightdrivein@gmail.com. Remember, no outside food or drink. Anyone caught performing sexual acts at the drive-in will immediately be taken to the office. Unspeakable things will be done to you. Thanks for calling.
Drive away your worries and cares at this drive-in theater.
That's why, to familiarize you with the movie rating symbols which will be used by this theater, we present the following guide for parents and young people. X, no one under 17 admitted.
No, it's free with ads. Voodoo.
Ooh, nice. Stop
telling me about voodoo.
Yeah, I know. That doesn't do you any good.
But having free healthcare.
Yeah, no kidding. Get over it.
It's kind of worth it. I'm whoopie, not gonna lie to you.
I mean, whoopie fucking do. We've got fucking Walmart streaming service, you cocksucker.
I didn't even go to the doctor this week. I should have.
Yeah, just because you can.
Just once a week. Went for my weekly checkup.
There's two different movies called Action Jackson that are available for rent through YouTube. And there's a free version of a movie called Action Jackson, but it's only in Hindi.
That's probably the one you should watch.
Really. I would most certainly watch the one in Hindi.
Something's fucked up with my internet browser. And the words, like on YouTube, all the words are jumbled. It's weird. It looks like it's like Arabic writing or something, but it's not. It's just jumbled up letters.
Oh my God. Action Jackson 2014 full Hindi movie. Blockbuster. I think we should watch this one.
No.
My love is a flower.
Oh, this Federale just grabbed this dude's collar. That's not a good idea. This dude's going to beat you up. Yep, he's got no shirt on. He's got tattoos. And a katana. Come on, Doug.
No, we can't. That's not the...
He's not even stabbing people with a katana. He's just straight punching them right in the face.
Yeah, but that's not the movie that's on the list.
I believe it says Action Jackson. I don't believe we signified which one it has to be. No. I'm totally saving this for later, though.
You guys need to quit talking about it before I get froggy and start slapping some Bollywood movies on here.
No.
Because there's some gloriously bad ones.
Yep, there's a dance number and what looks like the stage for WrestleMania. It's all lit up with different designs and shit.
All right, I'm just going to pick different movies to avoid further conversation.
Racist.
Yep, sure. That's not racist, because I don't like dancing in my movies.
It's double racist.
I typed in Deadly Prey. These are all the movies that are underneath of it. And it's Rage to Kill, and the synopsis, race car driver Blaine Stryker.
Need it.
Grows concerned about his younger brother, a med student on the island of St. Aaron. General Turner plans to blow up his school to blame the destruction on counter-revolutionaries. Stryker infiltrates St. Aaron and is captured by the... It was captured and electro-tortured. He joins forces with the counter-revolutionaries and foils a plot to assemble Russian missiles on the island. Seems like stuff that race car drivers should be doing. Add it to the list.
That sounded like somebody took Rambo 2 and True Lies and made it have a baby.
So, Noah, you want to tell us about Tucker and Dale versus Evil?
Excellent transition, bro.
Yeah, I know. I'm a master at this.
I do want to tell you about Tucker and Dale versus Evil. It is about two redneck friends, Tucker and Dale, who are attempting to move to their new summer home, which is a terrifying cabin out in the middle of the woods.
It's a fixer-upper.
At the same time, we have a group of stereotypical, although probably a little dumber than even the stereotypical teenagers in horror movies that are going out into the woods. Due to some miscommunications and eggings on by one particularly disturbed teenager, they place themselves into conflict and are slowly taking themselves out and assuming that Tucker and Dale are doing the killing. And chaos ensues. That's pretty much the whole plot. Oh, yeah. We find out that the douchey teen is actually half redneck, which I don't think it's a thing.
It's actually
first of all, yes, it is.
It's actually half hillbilly.
Oh, half hillbilly. Sorry.
I definitely think hillbilly or redneck, depending on how politically correct you're trying to be, is a culture, and that you can be born into it, and that you can definitely be half and half. So.
Yeah, but do you think it's genetic? Do you think you get past hillbilly gene, like?
You ever met a hillbilly kid and asked him to introduce you to his parents and they just weren't hillbillies? I don't think so.
Yeah, because I got a white trash gene from my mom's side of the family, but I try to suppress it as much as possible. So you can be half and half.
Yeah, like I come from rednecks. I fully admit that. And it's like, it's diluted because I'm only partial redneck. But every now and again, I do some stuff and I realize, not sure why I did that. It's like, look at that. Prop the barbecue up with bricks because that wheel fell off. Could have fixed the wheel, but
don't ever have to fix the bricks. That's a better solution.
Exactly.
So I think this is gonna be a weird episode where we just talk about how much we love everything, so
yeah, like let's get it out of the way early. Does anybody want to pull like some bullshit stance where you pretend you don't like Tucker and Dale versus Evil? If either one of you tries to tell me you don't like this movie, I'm going to say you're lying.
Well, no. I'm just I would say the whole thing is, and I say it a lot, but comedy / horror movies do not do very good if you try to do 50-50. If you try to make it like a comedy movie and a horror movie, it either needs to be a horror movie that is kind of funny or a funny movie that has horror themes to it. Yeah. Tucker and Dale is one of those few exceptions that they fucking nail it. Like, because it is, I think scary would be the wrong word, although, I mean, most of the kills and stuff are just as graphic as any R-rated horror movie out there.
Yeah, all the kills in this movie, without exception, would work in a slasher film if you just like changed the music and didn't have the comedy leading up to them. Without the exception of maybe the kid that jumps headfirst into the wood chipper, I don't know how you'd edit that into a horror film. You'd have to have somebody push him, I guess. But it's I do think, yeah, like there's the one scene where Dale has he's knocked out the girl for the second time in the movie, and he's fallen beside her in like the shitter hole, and the body falls, and it's like the other guy is like accidentally impales himself, and he's bleeding down on Dale, and you're just like, yeah, like in a horror movie that would be just a genuinely terrifying situation. In this movie, it's hilarious.
Hey, Colin Kidd. College kids.
I do like, yeah, that he keeps calling them college kids throughout the entire movie. But they're like surrounding the cabin, and he has a nail gun, and he's just like, "Hey, college kids!" So weird.
Well, they don't know their names.
But they, at that point, they've made friends with Allie, so they could have just
asked her,
like, what are your friends' names? Mind you, I mean, even when they all end up in the cabin together, and she's like, hey, I'm friends with both of you guys. Maybe you guys could learn to get along. They assume she has Stockholm Syndrome, which is pretty funny.
Yeah, I just, like, this is the first time Amanda had seen it, and she was cracking up during, like, the scene where the girl falls off the rock and hits her head in the lake or whatever. And they're picking her up, and the other people see her like, oh my God, look. And it's like, hey, we got your friend. Like, they're trying to be nice, and they're like, they got her. They're like freaking out.
Though the term "we got your friend" can be misinterpreted, it turns out. Tone is everything.
And then when Tucker's like cutting up wood or whatever, and he saws into a hornet's nest, and then he takes off running just as the kids are like gonna try to like help what's her face escape from the cabin, and he comes charging around the corner with a chainsaw.
I love the homage that he does the perfect leather face chainsaw wave while trying to fend off the bees.
I love that whole scene is predicated on the notion that he's trying to get the bees with the chainsaw. Like, that's why he's swinging that around. And none of us question it because it's executed so well that you don't need to. It's like, yeah, I could see trying it that way. That might work. You never know.
And then as he's chasing, quote unquote, chasing the kid through the woods, it just gets to the point where Tucker ends up passing him. And the kid's just looking at him kind of confused, and that's when he gets impaled in like a tree branch that's sticking out.
I love the fact that he's really the only one that appears to figure out what's going on. He like sees him run past and he's like, oh, wait, oh, this isn't what we thought it was, and dead.
The thing is, there's a sense of realism in that moment when he's running by him, and you're just like, could you imagine how fucking weird it would be if you thought you were being chased by somebody and then all of a sudden they passed you? I can't even imagine what would go on in your head. You'd be like, the hell?
And then the beginning of the movie, when they stop at the old gas station or whatever. And Dale's all like, oh, that girl's kind of cute. Maybe I should go talk to her. And of course, he walks over with a sigh because he doesn't think properly. And then when they don't respond, he just nervous laughs, which makes it 20 times worse.
Well,
he's going camping.
he tells them to, because he says, just no matter whatever they say, you know, smile and laugh so you look like you're relaxed. You going camping?
The thing about this movie is the casting of like Tyler Labine and Alan Tudyk as Dale and Tucker. Mm-hmm. Genius. Like, whoever pulled that off, whoever got those guys together and, you know, figured out to put them in this movie, that's where all the credit belongs in this movie, because those guys, I mean, both of them individually are great at being hilarious, but also creating sort of a sympathetic and likable character. Mm-hmm. And then the way they're able to play off each other in this movie is fascinating. It is just, they're so good. And they're, like, the whole time, like, you can completely understand why somebody who saw them and didn't know they were in a movie would be scared of them. However, you could also just see them as these likable characters. Everything they do.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see a movie from the point of view of the college kids.
Yeah, just like a complete switcheroo of it. Because, like, even like in that scene where you're talking about, where Dale is standing there, like, if you were a normal human being and you were just at a gas station and a big guy like that walked up to you carrying like a fucking, whatever it is, a sickle, and he just starts fucking talking to you like that and nervously laughing, yeah, it would creep you the fuck out. And it's completely reasonable that they get scared there. But then when you're watching it and you know it's him and you were privy to that previous conversation where he's all nervous and he's just laughing to try to act normal, you can totally see it from his perspective where he's like, I don't understand why they're creeped out by this.
Yeah, it is a great on-screen friendship that I would love to see more of. I don't know why there was never a sequel made.
Well, this movie, I mean, when something, it came out...
Something about it kept getting tied up in development, because I know they really set forth to make a sequel to it right after it came out, because you know it kind of fucking blew up.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept like getting directors and losing directors and getting the rights and losing the rights, and I don't know what it was.
This movie itself, it got caught up in like development hell and distribution hell at some point. Because remember, it was like people knew about this movie for a long time before it was actually available. And I don't know why that is exactly, but I know like there was just, it was one of those things. This seemed to happen a lot in like between like 2000 and like 2010. This seemed to happen quite often, where movies would get made and everybody would be like, that's cool, I want to see that. And they'd be like, well, we're not going to release it for a while. Yeah. We're going to hold it back for a little while. Just let you guys all talk.
Happened to the next movie we're going to talk about too.
Yeah, it happened to a lot of movies in that time frame for some reason. I don't really know why, but...
Yeah, so the film was shelved for 3 years before it was finally released, but it doesn't say why.
I mean, I can only assume.
Well, you know, it's because some asshole said, well, this isn't going to sell. And they're fucking stupid.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, I think like Hollywood suits, for some reason, get it in their head. They're like, well, we don't know how to market this, so let's not bother trying, which is super fucking weird once you've already put the money into making the movie. Mm-hmm. Like, the movie's made. I don't understand why the marketing holds it up, but that does happen. And I can totally understand why like normies would not know how to market this film. Like, they'd be like, okay, is it a comedy or is it a horror film? Yes. I don't know what to do with that now. You know what I mean? And I can completely get that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess the goal is to get as many people to see it as possible. But
you would think so.
Like, if I was, I'm just saying, like, if I was in charge of whoever, you know, for figuring out how to release this movie, I'd be like, well, the obvious crowd is going to be the horror crowd. So why don't we, like, invite, like, Fangoria and RumOrg and, you know, all these billion horror websites or whatever, and do a screening and have them do some interviews or whatever. And I feel like that covers a lot of ground that's going to get people in that genre excited to see it with very little effort.
Yeah, like, I don't even think you needed to do interviews and stuff. All you needed was a screening of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how anyone could watch this movie and not understand how much horror fans were going to love it. And it does have a lot of crossover appeal, too. Like, a lot of non-horror fans like this movie.
Yeah.
So I think once it got out there, you just have to kind of let that naturally spread. But the idea that you would not be sure how to get this to horror fans is like, just make people aware of what it is and put it out there. Mm-hmm. Everyone's going to like, every horror fan I know likes this movie.
Yeah.
It's strange to me. But then again, like, part of the problem with the whole system is you get, you know, horror fans making a movie that's designed for horror fans, and then the guy in charge of releasing it is just, you know, really good at attending board meetings. So they don't understand what they had. Like, they don't understand. Nobody, I think, in charge of releasing this film understood the genius that they had in their hands, or else they would have gotten it out there quicker. I mean, this film should have even been a theatrical release with proper marketing. I think you could have got a mainstream audience to buy into this movie. Might not be, you know, a $300 million box office, but certainly enough to make it profitable.
Right. If you can put a shitty, shitty, shitty remake of Friday the 13th in fucking theaters, then this can go into theaters. Well, but they did put a shitty, shitty remake of Friday the 13th into theaters.
Let's not get crazy.
Don't you talk about liking that movie, Brian.
I enjoy that movie.
You son of a bitch.
Let's calm down. Look.
The Nightmare on Elm Street remake can suck a bag of dicks, but I like the Friday the 13th one.
Look, I can get us all back on the same page.
Yeah.
Because I can say this. The same fucking system that resulted in this movie sitting on a shelf, while this movie was sitting on the shelf, the fucking Last House on the Left remake was made for direct-to-DVD, and people thought that was such a good movie they couldn't help but put it in theaters. That's what was going on at the time that this movie was sitting on the shelf not getting released. that's how fucked up the system is.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I don't get it. But I mean, if you just, you wouldn't even need to show this movie to critics. All you do is you show them the sequence. There's a period of time where about 5 kills happen all in a row. It starts with the guys when they come over. You have the kill in the shithole, the shitter hole. You have the guy jumping headfirst into the wood chipper. Then you have, what's next? I think it's the cop that's next. And then you have the kid that just accidentally shoots himself because he's trying to save everybody with the cop's gun after the cop accidentally kills himself. That's all in like 3 minutes. And you're just like,
The kid that shoots himself might be my favorite part of the whole fucking movie. Because even Tucker and Dale are going, hey, no, be careful with it. Bang!
What is like, was it fucking Dale's the one telling him how to shoot, how he can shoot them? Like, oh, I think you got the safety. It's like, shut up.
He's trying to shoot at them. Nah, you got to take the safety off. It's on the side there. And Tucker is so annoyed with him after. He's like, he's just shaking his head at him, like, oh, you had to tell him about the safety. And that's a prime example of the relationship between these two actors on screen. It's just so good.
It is very much like an Abbott and Costello or Laurel and Hardy sort of relationship, where one of them's always telling how he can improve his life, and then when he kind of does something stupid, they're like, damn it, Dale!
The dialogue between Tucker and Dale in this movie is fucking perfect. There's not a word of it that is not well-written and well-placed. And arguably, maybe some of the, like, teenagers' dialogue and stuff isn't very good, but at the same time, they're trying to make them look like dumb teenagers in a horror movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely intentional.
And, I mean, certainly there's a drop-off in acting when you move from Tucker and Dale over to the college kids. Because even, what's her name? Katrina Bowden.
Allie or whatever?
Yeah, like, she's good. Not great, but good. She does a really good job of being, like, the straight man to their ridiculousness. But then the other kids are not nearly as good.
No.
And that, I mean, that's fine. I mean, like, your stars are doing an excellent job. You can't expect the other people to keep up.
Yeah. I just want to go upstairs and watch this movie again.
I know, it's a hard movie to talk about because you're just like, I don't, how do I tell you that I just want to go watch the movie?
Call the cops and tell them what, Dale? That a bunch of teenagers showed up and just started killing themselves all over our property.
Well, that's what happened. Yeah, how was that conversation go? Look, officer, we have had a doozy of a day.
The fact that the cop shows up and he basically has to do that word for word is pretty fantastic.
I know. What I love about that too is I'm pretty sure the cop believed him. Like, the cop is sitting here going, like, he's telling him, like, if you guys are lucky, this is just involuntarily manslaughter. And then, like, he just bumps into that post that they've been teasing the whole movie. It takes himself out. And I love that the cop's walking around with that thing stuck in his head, and the college kids are all freaking out, and then Tucker's just like, how is he even standing right now like this? Call out the ridiculousness. That way nobody in the audience has the right to question it.
Yeah, I could just... Like, I would love a sequel. I imagine putting them... Like, okay, so they did the horror movie. I would put them in, like, an Alien movie after that.
Sure.
Tucker and Dale fight aliens or whatever. It would be amazing.
Yeah, like if you just took these two guys and had them bounce into like different subgenres, like here's your slasher movie one, right? Killer hillbilly movie, whatever you want to call it, and then so just have them move into one, have them fight ghosts in one, that'd be amazing.
Oh, they missed out. That could have been the new Madea. But
let's not. You don't have to be mean to
them. But hey, those Madea movies make money at least. I don't understand it, but they do.
My problem is with taking them and throwing them into the other scenarios. I'm not sure how that works with the formula because
there isn't a formula technically. Yeah, there's only been one movie, so.
Well, but I'm saying, but like the entire thing that makes the movie great is basically they took the horror bad guys and said, well, no, they're not the bad guys. I don't know how you would do, like, if you brought in ghosts with Tucker and Dale, now the ghosts are still the bad guys. So now it's just like, once we've transitioned it from Tucker and Dale to Abbott and Costello.
All right, so what you have to do is you have to have a movie where the ghosts are the good guys, but the teenagers think the ghosts are the bad guys. You establish that setting, and then you do your crossover film.
Yeah, Tucker and Dale die by accident, and people think they're bad ghosts, but they're actually...
See?
Ghosts. They're just confused.
That could be funny as shit. Or you move it to a slightly different genre, and you do, like, a Hills Have Eyes thing, where Tucker and Dale have moved out into the desert after their traumatic experience in the woods.
Just move out where no teenagers are going to find them?
Yeah, and then some random fucking family shows up and starts terrorizing them and eating each other. And
oh, so here we go.
Professionals write this new movie, because I'm not sure what we're coming up with here.
Well, here we go. So Tucker and Dale at some point die in the new ghost movie. So the people think they're bad ghosts, but they're actually good ghosts, and hijinks ensue. The third movie, Tucker and Dale want to come back to life, so they start possessing people, and then we get an exorcism movie. So people think they're like demons or whatever. And then somehow in the fourth movie, they're alive again. We just don't even address it. And then, yeah, we move into the...
Or they could be zombies. Friendly zombies.
Oh, there you go. See? That's three more quality movies right there.
If they were zombies, they could fight Sean from Shaun of the Dead. Could have another
crossover. Tucker and Dale versus Shaun of the Dead. I'd watch it.
There you go.
I don't know how, but if they were to get mutated, we could have Tucker and Dale as Chuds. which just sounds delightful.
Well, see, you just keep having them move to different places, and eventually they end up in the New York subway system, which we know is flooded every night at a certain time with toxic waste. So.
And then they have to fight an alligator in the sewers for some reason.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Why does that wet bandit guy keep coming down here?
Damn it, Dale. I told you to stop watching those movies.
We're beset by half the cast of Home Alone.
All right. So does anybody else have anything to say about Tucker and Dale?
I don't know.
Other than how awesome it is.
If we just want to comment on more awesome things that happen, every time something happens to Tucker, the way he gets super annoyed by it, like when his fingers get cut off, and he's just like fucking pissed, and he's like holding up his hand to the fingers, and he just goes and gets a beer and puts it on.
Yeah, I was just reading that the scene where he gets stung in the face and he starts pouring beer over it.
Yeah,
like apparently that was improvised. Like he's just like, what if I just pour beer over my face? Seems like something Tucker would do.
It seems like as good a solution as any to that situation. I can't think. So, towards the end of the movie, it does take a bit of a shift towards horror. Basically, mm-hmm. after the cabin explodes, and we get the prime dickhead there. When he's all burnt up and he becomes the villain. Guess they did a good job of switching over to the horror, because I think it did pretty good.
Did pretty good. I mean, that guy's a little cartoony, but I mean, I think that was kind of the point the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, it suits the movie.
Yeah, totally.
You wouldn't want to be too serious.
Yeah.
It's not quite to the level of, like, probably the best example of that is Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon. That's probably the best example of a movie that was comedic throughout and then did the old switch into being a more serious horror film at the end. But that movie was less slapsticky, so it was a little bit less of a transition. I think this movie did it really well, though.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. And then, of course, we get the classic damsel in distress, like tied to a log, about ready to get chopped up by a...
Oh, yeah, stereotypes are in full effect in this movie.
Oh, yeah. It's trope after trope after trope, which is fantastic, because then it just basically is just like, isn't this ridiculous if you look at it from this point of view? But it's still tons of fun.
I do love Dale's outfit at the end whenever he shows up to save the girl, and he's basically just strapped a bunch of random shit to himself as armor. He's like, I thought it would look kind of intimidating.
Yeah, he comes in, she starts screaming. He's like, no, it's me, it's Dale. Takes the welder's mask off.
I almost wondered if it was a Commando reference, too, the way they did that, like, cutting to him, putting all that stuff on. It reminded me so much of John Matrix on the beach there.
Everything's better with a Commando reference.
Yeah, I tend to insert Commando where it doesn't need to be inserted. That's not just for podcast purposes. I do that at work, too. It's kind of awkward.
Like, Doug, who is John Ram or John Matrix, and why do you keep writing memos to him?
What are you editing this stuff in your PowerPoint? Oh, that's his, the rocket launcher that John Matrix used.
Yeah, Tucker and Dale, high recommend from all three of us.
Yeah, I like how you felt comfortable speaking on behalf of us.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's nearly perfect movie. There are a couple of a couple of gay jokes that already seem to have dated very poorly, even though this movie's less than a decade old. But at the time, those were perfectly acceptable forms of humor.
All right, so should we move on to Cabin in the Woods?
Hell yeah!
No, let's not. Yeah. So Cabin in the Woods, written by Joss Whedon, came out the following year, even though it was shelved for a number of years as well.
Which makes no damn sense.
No. Well, I think it was it was part of a studio that went bankrupt and then got bought. Like, the studio's assets got bought by another studio. And I think they were trying to figure out like what they owned and what they're going to release. It took a while to kind of figure all that shit out.
Yeah.
Studio politics.
Still dumb. Should have released it right away.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, when you look at it, it's like, you know, written by Joss Whedon and Drew Goddard, and it's got fucking Thor in it and stuff, and you're just like, how does that not get released quickly?
Yeah, well, he wasn't Thor when it was made.
I think he might have become Thor in between when it was made and when it was released. It's pretty close.
Thor came out the same year as this movie, so yeah.
Well, you can tell this movie's a bit earlier because he's a little smaller.
Yeah.
He's smaller than he is in his role as Thor.
All right, so... starts out a group of kids going in an RV to supposedly someone's cousin's cabin. You get sort of your collection, you know, a couple girls, a couple guys, and then of course Marty the Stoner shows up driving his car with his giant
bong. The most stereotypical stereotypes of all time.
Yes. But they do try to change it up a little bit so that when later the stereotypes go full effect, they can point out, like, well, this doesn't make any sense because of blah, blah, blah. So they go. Of course, they stop by the creepy gas station. This guy known as the Harbinger tells them not to go, but of course they do. They show up at the cabin. The cabin is very much modeled after Evil Dead. I mean, it pretty much looks exactly like the Evil Dead cabin from the front. Get inside, start drinking, start doing all that kind of stuff. And we find out from the beginning of the movie that there's a underground organization that is sort of in charge of making sure these kids go to this cabin and some bad stuff happens to them. As the movie goes on, we find out that they're actually being sacrificed sort of old world style, but sort of with a modern twist, where they come up with these very elaborate ways for these people to die. To the point they even load up this cabin with all these artifacts and essentially make them choose which monster is going to come after them to kill them. Somebody picks up somebody's journal, and of course it's the redneck zombie torture family that comes to life. And they start getting picked off one by one as trope after trope reveals itself on screen. And then at the end, it turns out Marty the Stoner is about the only one who is unaffected by different chemicals and stuff that they've doused all these kids with because he smokes a bunch of weed and they didn't find his weed stash enough to lace it properly. So he ends up becoming our big hero throughout most of the movie.
Well, I think the excuse they give at one point is they basically say that his pot is so strong that it's overriding the other drugs that they put into his pot.
Well, what you call an excuse, I call a reasonable explanation.
So we find that Marty and the final girl descend into this weird underground corporation lair where we find that they house a shit ton of monsters. Some of them are very much parodies of very famous monsters. And they're like, fuck this. And so they release them all to a pretty much fantastic scene of just monsters running amok throughout this corporation, killing people.
Yep.
And it all culminates into finding out sort of what the reasoning behind all this is, why it's being done, and sort of what happens if they don't complete it.
And a random ass cameo by Sigourney Weaver.
Not random at all.
Yeah. What I read, they originally wanted Jamie Lee Curtis to play that.
Makes sense.
Makes sense, but according whatever to, reason it happened.
According to the making of documentary that I watched when I couldn't sleep the night after I watched the movie, they had intended that role to be a male. And when they decided to switch it to a female, they only ever approached Sigourney Weaver to play it.
Oh.
So
that would be wrong. IMDb says Jamie Lee Curtis was considered for the role of the director. It ultimately went to Weaver.
That contradicts what they say
in
the bonus features of the DVD.
Yeah, I'd go with the bonus features. Maybe it was maybe it was just some offhand comment. It's like, we should see if Jamie Lee Curtis wants to play it. And then they just never asked her and went with Sigourney Weaver instead. It's probably some weird random thing that doesn't even constitute for the fact that she was considered for the role. You know how it goes.
I think this movie's biggest flaw, lack of Bruce Campbell.
Bruce Campbell would help. Sure.
I don't know where you'd stick him in, though. That's pretty much a flaw in every movie.
I would have put him in as one of the random monsters, just him in fairly heavy makeup, but you could still recognize him.
Maybe like Deadeye makeup. I got it better. He could have been the Harbinger at the gas station.
Oh, yeah, that would have been pretty fucking
funny. He's wearing the blue shirt, telling them that they shouldn't go.
Yeah. Could have even had his arm in like some kind of a sling to kind of imply that he was missing a hand, but not quite. Yeah. Like, I don't recommend you spend a lot of time alone at a cabin in the woods.
So I absolutely love this movie. It just has fucking everything. Like I say, the tropes are definitely up on the screen, and they have a shit ton of fun with them. And the movie's really smart in sort of breaking down the horror movie in general.
Yeah.
And then explaining why all these tropes exist and sort of just having fun with it and turning it all on its head.
Yeah, I absolutely love the idea that everything that's happening in everything is happening exactly like in a traditional horror movie, but then there's this behind the scenes group controlling it to make sure that happens. I fucking think that's fantastic.
Yeah, Bradley Whitford and then I don't know that dude's name, the old guy, the dad from Step Brothers.
Yeah, Richard Jenkins is his name.
Yes, Richard Jenkins. And
those guys are, like we talked about the chemistry in the last movie, those guys are amazing in this movie. They're literally the Statler and Waldorf for the film for a lot of the time. They're just sitting back commentating on what else is going on, and I fucking love it. Both of them are perfect because they're both fully able to be like hardcore comedy guys, mm-hmm. but do the kind of like the switch over to make everything seem a little more serious when they need the movie to have some tension.
Yeah.
Like there's the one scene where one of them has to like run and like fix something to get the explosion to happen to keep the kids from leaving. And it's really weird because in that moment you're like actually like nervous for them and you're like, come on, get there. You got to fix that before they escape. And you're like, wait a minute. I think we're supposed to be cheering for the other guys.
Did you see it? He had the freaking conch in his hand. I'm never going to get to see a merman.
When he pats him on the shoulder, and he's like, it's like you can tell that every year he wants to see the merman, and he never gets to, and everybody just kind of feels bad for him.
Now, I would say so. 75% of this movie is great. And then the last 25, no, is fucking awesome.
Okay.
Well, right? Okay, there we go. About the time that they get into the weird cube-esque elevator.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which I'm assuming that was on purpose, that it was
probably.
I think so. Yeah.
But from that moment until the end of the movie is just the best. Like it's like I can't even fucking describe it. It is as close to horror movie like porn as something gets, and not porn in like the sexual way, but in the just it's all just fan service, you know what I mean? It's all just there for people like me to go.
I don't know how many times I've paused this movie on like some of those shots and trying to figure out what everything is. And every now and again, there's a couple that I like, I'm not really 100% sure what that is. And it bugs the shit out of me that I don't know.
Yeah. Sometimes there's times where people are over and they're like, I don't want to watch the movie, but can we just pull up the scene where everything goes nuts? And I'm just like, oh yeah, sure. We just watch from like that point forward.
It's just,
well, yeah, and I mean, some of them are deep cuts. Like, I do believe you see one of the worms from Deep Rising, and that's possible. Like sweet fuck. Like,
in the interest of fairness, no, you don't. You see a worm that happens to look like one of those worms because they bought the rights to nothing. That Cenobite with the circular, the cylinder instead of the cube or whatever it is, and you're just like, okay, I see what you're doing here.
But then just the tons of monsters that are just made up too, like the fucking ballerina with the teeth face, and the fucking was it like the people with the porcelain masks that are essentially supposed to be, I guess, represent sort of like the home invasion,
I guess they are.
Scenario, because they just go in and set people on fire, like with gas and stuff in one of the offices.
Yeah, good for them. so good. And the monsters all look great for a relatively low budget movie. I have the budget in front of me. But, you know, for a movie that was, you know, not a $100 million movie, they made all those monsters look good.
Yeah. They made the werewolf look good, which is.
Is it just weird? Does it look a lot like the werewolf from Bad Moon?
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty close. But, I mean, they do a good job of not showing it enough so you don't maybe see the flaws in it, which is awesome. Especially towards the end when, what's her name? I don't even remember her name. The redhead is going to shoot Marty to save the entire world. And then the werewolf is just slowly sneaking up behind her, and you just see his face over her shoulder. I'm just like, oh my god, this looks so awesome.
Once again, movie should have had a sequel.
But how? The world was destroyed.
Oh my god. No, that sequel should be like a post-apocalyptic Mad Max-esque world with a few survivors happening to live in a world that literally everything from horror movies has come to life and is just devastating and murdering everything. And I mean, yes, there would be giant titan gods walking around, but they can be way off in the background. We don't need them.
I was going to say something. I completely forgot what it was. I don't know.
Who has a favorite death from the movie?
Only because of the comedic part of it when they're in the elevator and that guard comes in with like his gun drawn. He's like, you know, put your hands up. But then the zombie arm grabs him, so he looks all distracted, and then he just beat the fuck out of him. And then he's leaving. He's like, good job, zombie arm, as they leave, and the arm slowly crawling up onto that dude's face.
The performance there from Marty is really good. I really like when they first find him. They find out he's still alive. And she gets out of the elevator with him, and he like the zombie's like all hacked up in the corner. He's like, oh yeah, I did disembowel that guy with a trowel.
Yeah,
and then they just move on.
Dismember. I had to dismember that
guy. It was just perfect. It's just like, oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So they set up that like, actually, like Chris Hemsworth is going for like, what was it, a sociology degree or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So essentially, yeah. He's actually pretty smart, and then he invites his friend who, I don't know. I mean, they never insinuate that he's smart, but they never insinuate that he's like super douchey jock guy either. But then they get to the cabin and they start releasing like all these like chemicals or whatever.
Yeah,
or is it in the beer? I don't remember. Either way, they essentially make it so Chris Hemsworth turns into the super douchey like jock bro guy.
Yep.
And then his friend turns like is suddenly wearing glasses and like being like super brainy and stuff, and everybody's just like, why is everybody acting this way?
Well, they're like, he's on a full ride scholarship. He gets better grades than me.
They imply that the sluttier of the girls too was like normal until recently, and I think there's a line of dialogue that they say they put it in her blonde hair dye. Yeah. So that when she decided to dye her hair blonde, she just naturally became sluttier, which is hilarious. Because they do, it's such a good, like, obviously we know if we were watching a horror movie that the blonde girl would be the slutty one. We all know that that's the case. So it's just like, now we have a detailed explanation for it.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I love that scene too, where they're both sitting there and they're like, okay, show us the boobies.
Yeah, she doesn't want to sleep with them. And then she's like, oh, it's too dark. And then they're in there with the control room, like, bump up the moonlight, the pheromones, which comes out of the ground, is like a mist covering the ground.
It's so funny.
I do like in the background of this movie, there's like a bunch of other movies going on, which we unfortunately never get to see. So there's like a Japanese movie with all these schoolgirls like getting harassed by like a Japanese ghost or demon or something.
Yeah, it's a typical J-horror ghost movie going on.
And then they defeat it with the power of friendship or some weird thing that turns it into a
power. I fucking love that moment. Days in the Happy Frog.
I love that moment where all the little girls are just singing in their schoolgirl uniforms and like the fucking ghost is getting turned into a frog and they're all getting pissed off about it. Like, God damn it, Japan, you dropped the ball.
Richard Jenkins is looking at it like right up his nose, right up next to the monitor. He's like, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you.
He's talking to like these little like 6-year-old Japanese girls.
We get a shot of a helicopter flying by what looks like a snowed in like outpost, which of course is a thing reference.
Where it's flipping through all the different countries.
Yeah.
And it looks like there's like a German cannibal movie going on and a few other ones.
Yeah. And then, of course, it's down to the U.S. And, of course, that gets all fucked up.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they're taking bets on what they're going to end up picking, like, down in the basement. Usually this giant whiteboard with, like, all this shit listed. One of them's, like, horny tree or something.
I love the how they're all make fun of the fucking... the maintenance team for pooling their money and betting on the same thing every year. Then they win.
It's so good.
I I do like the fact that they even make a crack about the minutiae of his horror genres, where the ones like, hey, I had zombies too, and they're like, ah, you had zombies? This is zombie murder torture redneck family. They are different thing. Clearly different.
And he actually refers to them as a different species, which is hilarious to me as well.
One of the things on the whiteboard is just named Kevin. It's just like, I want to know what Kevin is. Like, what?
That's the thing, is like, I want to see a whole bunch of different versions of this movie where all those different things happen.
Oh my god, a choose-your-own-adventure version of this movie?
They could make prequels. Infinite prequels.
Oh, they could. That's a good idea.
Prequels and side stories from all those other countries. Like,
I mean, you kind of already know how they end, but you don't know if the final girl survives or not. So pretty much you're going into it with the same knowledge as any horror movie.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah, I would totally watch it. Somebody needs to buy up the rights.
You just gotta sign like Woodford and Jenkins to like a 10-picture deal, because those guys have to be in it. You gotta de-age them, get that Marvel technology going.
Right. What if they announced the next one and the next one was called Cabin in the Woods 2, Kevin?
Oh, that's it.
Sold. I'm buying 10 tickets already.
Yeah, take my $14.99 and mail it directly to the studio now. Just be like, here you go. I'll get the popcorn on my own once I'm at the theater.
So according to IMDb, the thermal coffee mug bong was a fully functional mug and bong as portrayed in the film. But the prototype cost $5,000 to make.
Why would it cost $5,000?
I don't know.
Because it needed to be actually functional.
Did people make functional bongs out of like apples and shit every day?
You could have just got a stoner and made it for $20.
Just got a stoner and just make it for you can keep what you make. Give it back to us so we can make a movie with it, and then you can have it.
Oh, good Lord.
Allegedly, by the way, on the bongs making it out. Allegedly. I know you guys are recording in the States. I don't want you guys to accidentally express knowledge of such matters.
Flashback, another favorite part of the movie. So when the elevators open and, of course, all the guards get wiped out and the blood's being hosed on that window like a super soaker. That's really cool. But the best thing is when the backup shows up, and like there's all this blood everywhere and they're like, what the hell happened here? All of a sudden you just hear ding and the elevator's open again.
So good.
Just yeah, this movie's just, it really nails it. It really does everything just right.
Does anybody have a favorite monster?
I really like the look of that Cenobite.
That was pretty cool looking.
And the actor did it really well too, where he played it with just that intimidating stare at the camera the whole time and just that calmness to him. Like he could have been out of a good Hellraiser movie, not one of the other nine.
Yeah.
The merman, but only after the fact that you find out that basically the merman like sucks your blood like a vampire, blows it out of his blowhole.
Yeah. I didn't love the look of the merman, but I loved the concept of the merman, and I loved the joke. Like, even though it's a joke that you can see coming, like the first time I saw this movie, I knew the merman was going to show up. I knew exactly how it was going to play out. Didn't care. Still awesome.
So according to IMDb, the scene of the merman feeding on him had to be done in one take because they knew as soon as like that blood went everywhere, they would never be able to clean it up. So yeah. They're like, we got one shot at this. Favorite monster?
It's hard.
It is hard. Because I kind of enjoy whatever the robot one is, just because that reminds me of Chopping Mall, even though this is a way more sophisticated robot than the Chopping Mall robots.
Well, because this one hasn't been struck by lightning yet.
That's true. That's very true.
how much would it have been great to have a killbot in this movie? That would have been fantastic.
Thank you. Come again. Well, anything else?
Cabin in the Woods. Is like
awesome. A, yeah, it's a hard movie to discuss because it's just so good, and it's one of those ones like so. When I watched it with like myself, a normie, and a 10-year-old who's a growing horror fan, and we all enjoyed it. Oh, like, I'm not sure if I should have been showing it to a 10-year-old or not, but I did, and it's like, I think to her it was just a scary movie. Like, she doesn't get all the jokes necessarily because she doesn't understand the tropes, but it worked on that level for somebody who's less sophisticated at, when it comes to watching these types of movies. So I think that that's kind of a miracle to make it work on those different levels at the same time. Very few movies do.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked about the perfect blending of comedy and horror with Tucker and Dale, and I think this movie might even be better at blending the comedy and horror. I think it actually works on both levels individually.
Yeah.
Would you guys like me to read off the list of the whiteboard that I just found?
Yeah, go for it.
Yes.
All right. Alien Beast.
Okay.
Angry Molesting Tree.
There we go.
The Bride. Clowns. Deadites. Demons. Dismemberment Goblins.
Awesome. See, now I'm trying to figure out what all these look like.
Right. The Doctors, Dolls, the Dragon Bat, which I'm assuming is the big bat that they fight in the hallway, Giant Snake, Hell Lord, which I'm assuming Hell Lord is the Cenobite.
That makes sense.
The Huron, that's a type of bird. I don't think we ever get to see that, but I would like to know, because it says the R&D department places their bet on that monster.
It sounds like a giant Rodan like type of bird, probably.
Right. Oh no, yeah, the two-headed rock bird that you see—that's probably it. Jack-o'-lantern, Kevin, merman, mummy, mutants, the reanimated. Reptilus, which I'm assuming is a Reptilicus reference. Sasquatch / Wendigo / Yeti.
I love the idea of the slashes. Like, yeah, it turns out those are all the same thing.
Right. Scarecrow folk. We see those in the movie. Sexy witches.
Oh.
Oh my god, there's a Jack Frost reference. Snowman. The Sugar Plum Fairy. The Twins. The Unicorn. Vampires. Werewolves. Witches. Different than sexy witches. Raid. Yeah, Zombie Redneck Torture Family. And zombies. And then there's also a list of things that you see in the movie that were clearly not on the whiteboard. In which, holy shit, that's a long list. We can't go through that.
The thing is, like, you didn't say any that I don't want to watch the movie. Like, I want to watch the one where it's the unicorn just killing people. The unicorn got one good kill in the movie, and I'd like to see it do that 10 more times.
If somebody told me that there was a movie showing at a theater 5 hours away from me right now that was called Dismemberment Goblins, I am sick, and I would put on an adult diaper and I would drive to go see Dismemberment Goblins.
I would plan my trip more wisely and stop to use the washroom along the way.
No time.
No, we don't. You understand the movie doesn't start when you get there. It starts at the start time, so.
Just why there's no time. Gotta get there now.
What the fuck is that? I want to see the twins, too. Like, it's gotta be creepy as shit.
I assume that's a Shining reference.
Probably.
So I don't remember seeing twins in the movie. Now it's plausible that I missed them, surrounded by the blood and guts and monsters and centipedes and flying dragon looking things. Like maybe there was a pair of twins somewhere in there that I just missed.
What I'm disappointed with, looking because I found this whiteboard as well, is none of the departments put any bets on the Sasquatch / Wendigo / Yeti.
That's upsetting.
No.
But, I mean, it is just pure luck, so it's not like...
I know.
Like, it's literally like, if that guy had blown in that conch before she read from that book, then there would have been a merman.
But I'm just saying, nobody had faith that they wanted to see a Sasquatch kill all these people.
It looks like nobody bet on Kevin either.
Which is bullshit.
Especially since we know, like, maintenance and the intern bet on the same thing. Mm. So you're splitting the pot. You should have taken a chance.
Bunch of jerks.
I mean, not knowing what we know now, but... It is a great little moment when they announce that the intern won and he's way in the background and he's just like, yeah!
Oh my god. There's another list on here of monsters that are also mentioned in the novelization version and it adds 30 more.
I didn't know there was a novelization of this.
I need to find this and read it because I'm sure it's pretty fantastic.
I don't know if a lot of this would translate to book format, but I'd be willing to give it a shot.
Interesting that they found a way to take the how it's playing up the movie tropes and make it play up like the horror novel tropes.
Yeah, I don't know.
Ooh, it's only $8. There's pictures to go along with this list down at the bottom.
We're going to have to include a link to that because people are going to be like, there's a lot of silence in this week's episode. Yeah, we got distracted. It's the problem when everybody likes the movies is we just sit here and gush over them for a while. It's very difficult to do critical analysis of something this good because you're like, what's the flaw in this movie?
There isn't one. That's the flaw.
And the thing about this movie is, like, even when something sounds cheesy, it ends up making a lot of sense. Because, like the speech that the Chris Hemsworth character gives before he dies sounds so douchebaggy. But when you realize that that's because they turned him into a douchebag using chemicals specifically so he'd be the kind of asshole that gives that sort of speech, you're like, oh, yeah, that really makes a lot of sense. I love that death. I love that moment. He's like... gonna hero it up and jump to safety and it just hits that barrier.
So
it's the barrier and then tumbles along the barrier the entire way down.
Every time he bumps it and it lights up a bit, I'm like, yeah.
Thanks for calling the Midnight Drive-In. No one is here to take your call. For more info, check out the Midnight Drive-In on Twitter at MN Drive-In Pod or find us on Facebook. If you want to email us, send it to themidnightdrivein@gmail.com. Remember, no outside food and drink. Anyone caught performing sexual acts at the drive-in will immediately be taken to the office. Unspeakable things will be done to you. Thanks for calling.
Alright, anybody watch anything this week?
I actually watched a few things today.
Oh. Last minute jump?
Oh yeah, I was at home sick, so I actually had some movie watching time. And they're all three about Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, good lord.
That's awesome, because now he's not going to make us do that stupid Dungeons and Dragons month he wanted us to do.
None of these three are on that list. I apologize. But I watched The Dungeon Masters, which is a documentary that follows three people who run games at Gen Con. That's supposed to be about Dungeon Masters, but instead seems to be a movie that pretty much just almost follows them and it's like, look at how sad their lives are. Oh yeah, and they play D&D.
That was that movie.
Sounds right.
That was that movie Monster Camp too. Did you ever see that?
I did not.
It's about LARPers.
Ah. Yeah. So it was, it's not a badly made documentary or anything, but I find it weird. I don't get what the fuck they were trying to do. Because it almost feels like they took this movie and they tried to find like three people whose lives were all fucked up. And then go, oh yeah, look at these nerds. Look how fucked up their lives are. Which is weird. Mm-hmm. It seemed to take a very negative view of these three people. And one of them at least seems like he didn't deserve that kind of shit. He just seems like a dorky dude that all he wanted to do was be like a creator. And he's just not that talented, you know what I mean? But so there was that. Not a very big recommend. I don't know. It doesn't actually fucking talk about the game very much. All it does is, once again, it's just a really intimate view of the problems of these people's lives, which that there's something just fucking wrong about that. I don't know. It's nobody's fucking business.
Yeah.
But, and then after that, I finally got around to watching Darkest Dungeon, which I've been meaning to watch for a long, long time, which is based off of the Jack Chick tracks about D&D. And I'm trying to figure out if this movie was made as like a serious thing where they were like, let's actually make these Jack Chick tracks into a movie, or if it was tongue in cheek and they were making fun of Jack Chick tracks, because either way, it's equally funny. It just, I mean, like the idea that, you know, at the beginning, they're like, oh, watch out for that group. That's the RPGers. They go and they RPG on the weekends. Don't be tempted by them because they're so popular.
I don't know if they realized who they were talking about.
Oh my God. It's amazing. Like, they go to this like crazy nightclub where, you know, where of course it's like a college party where there's like dubstep and they're all drinking and stuff. And then all of a sudden, like, this guy stands up and he's like, everyone be quiet. This isn't why we're here. It's time to RPG. They like set up a table in the middle of the room and oh my God, it's really, really, really funny, and I highly recommend it to everyone because it's just ridiculous. And like the whole movie is about the fact that if they could just corrupt one more person with Dungeons and Dragons, that basically Cthulhu is going to rise and destroy the world. And it's fucking fabulous. Down to the weird, there's a bunch of weird gay jokes between the two main characters, which are both women. And they're not gay jokes, as in, haha, they're making fun of gay people. But they're supposed to be these two uber Christian girls, and one of them is clearly a lesbian and super into the other one and just can't say anything about it. Because they're like, at one point, she's like, yeah, the only thing else to do would be us both to go home and just, you know, be in our dorm room alone all night together. And what kind of fun could we have then? And the other one's like, ha, 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 yeah, what kind? So I recommend, it's on Prime right now for free, so you can go check it out. And then, what was the third thing I fucking watched? I can't even fucking remember what it was. I know I watched three. Come on, brain. Oh, I lied to you guys because one of them is on the list. Darkness Rising, the second movie in the Gamer series, which is still fucking hilarious. It's really, really funny. It follows the a game being run by a guy who's trying to run an original module that he can't ever get through because his friends that are playing are kind of fuckwits and keep fucking his game up. And it follows all the usual tropes of there's the guy playing the bard that's basically just trying to fuck his way through the entire game. And the guy who insists on playing OP characters. And then, of course, there's the girl who comes and they make her a character and they're trying to tell her what to play. But she ends up making her own character completely different from what they want, and it ends up being fucking awesome because she actually bothered to read the rule book and figure out what the best way to do it is. But it's awesome. If you like nerd stuff, watch it. It's funny. It's in my D&D month, so you guys will get to see it eventually.
We're not doing a D&D month. It's just not fucking happening.
We're doing a whole D&D month, Doug.
We're not doing a D&D month.
It's a whole month of D&D.
Doug's going to be sick that month.
Jesus Christ. I thought we were doing a thing where we were nice to each other when we picked the fucking movies.
That is me being nice. Just because you will learn to love it like a fine wine.
Yeah.
At first you're going to be like, I don't like this grape-flavored beer. But then you'll figure it out. You'll be on board.
Well, I don't think I will be.
There's a Peter Dinklage movie in there. It's got the Dinklage in it.
Yeah, everybody had some mistakes in their past.
It's a Joe Lynch movie, too.
Yeah. And we were talking about things that got stuck in development hell. That movie took a long time to come out. And it
big story about that, yeah.
Yeah, they basically like reshot the whole fucking movie 3 times.
They took it away from Joe Lynch, too.
So it's not a Joe Lynch
movie. Well, it is. Partially. I mean, he shot it, and then the producer basically ran off with it and then made a really shitty edit just so he could finally sell it.
Yep, so that's all I watched. They're awesome.
That's it?
That and I've been working my way through Arrested Development, and I've almost got through all of it.
Almost in time for the new season to start up.
I know. I never watch it because I'm not a huge fan of what's this? Scott Pilgrim, that asshole.
Michael Cera.
Michael Cera, thank you. He just he's terrible. I don't understand why they put him in things. He's a bad actor. He's very bad. But I never realized all the other people that were in it because they're all really funny. Got Mallory Archer and
Jason Bateman.
Jason Bateman. There's an awful lot of incest jokes. Incest jokes and jokes about fucking old people. It's like 75% of the show.
Point. Yes, yes it is.
What'd you watch, Doug?
Let's see. First thing I did, for some reason I got very interested in Norwegian death metal this week.
Sure.
So after listening to several podcasts about it, I watched the movie Lords of Chaos, which is the semi-true story about how shit in Norway got way out of control because kids listened to some heavy metal music, which I think is actually a pretty accurate telling based on what else I learned this week, unless everything else I learned this week is based on the same source material as this movie, which is plausible. But the story is basically about these kids who get into death metal and start taking it way too seriously, and by the end of it there's like 40 churches that have been burned down and like 3 people that are dead, which is probably way too serious to take your music. I think the movie does a really good job of capturing the downward spiral that happens. Basically, it starts out as just a bunch of kids playing heavy metal music and partying and maybe doing some kind of like normal, dumb young kid shit. And then when this new guy kind of joins the group who takes everything way more serious, he sort of drags them all into this weird path of like acting like all the shit they're saying is real and that, you know, they're not just fucking, they're not just goofing around, that they're actually supposed to be like fighting for some sort of a weird cause. I think they do a good job of showing that. And one of the things that the movie does really well is it has, I almost want to say a little bit of a lighthearted tone, but then when the serious shit happens, it goes full serious. And so there is, at one point there's a suicide that happens on screen, and it's a several minutes long scene that is very difficult to watch, of this like 18-year-old kid just cutting himself. And I think it's hard to watch, and it ought to be. And it's, from what I can tell, it's what happened. It cuts from like party scenes to that pretty quickly, to kind of give you an idea of like, yeah, this is what happens when you, like, when your friends are encouraging you to be depressed instead of discouraging your depression and trying to help. I think it actually captures the impression I have of what went on. It captures it pretty good. So I'd recommend people watch it if you're interested in that kind of stuff. It does.
Some of the reviews I've read for it have been odd. What's his name? Yorgi. He's from a metal band. I can't remember which one. But he was like, sure, the movie's factually accurate, but, you know, it's fictionalized. But he keeps, like, circling back while they're talking to him, and they're like, yeah, but all this stuff happened, right? And he's like, oh, well, yeah, all of it's true. I mean, it's, you know, everything that happened is true, but you know, they made stuff up. And they're like, okay, well, which parts did they make up? And he's like, well, you know, it's true.
Yeah.
where they're, like, having this real cognitive dissonance of not wanting to admit that it was just a bunch of fucking people being fucking stupid, you know? Yeah,
because it really is, and it's not like, I don't think anybody in the story, like, the story takes place over the course of several years. I don't think any of the characters hit the age of, like, 25. So you're kind of supposed to be dumb when you're 19 and a metalhead. Like, it's okay to be dumb. It's just, when the serious results started coming from it, when there were actually churches being burned down, you're like, oh shit, like, that's not okay. Like, it's, and that's what, like, when I say they go from like that lighthearted tone to the darker moments, I think that's what they're trying to portray, is because it's so weird too. And like the one guy, you can never quite get a grasp on him. Like, he's sort of the leader of this little group, and he runs like a record store where they all, like, some of them like live in it, and they all like hang out in the basement and party and stuff. And it's like, you never can quite put your finger on, is he just like completely fucked up, or is he just an opportunist, or is he just trying to have fun, or is it some combination of all three? Like, when that first kid kills himself, he goes out and buys a camera and takes pictures before he calls the cops or anything. Like, that's his instinct, is to document this so that he can have those pictures for later for marketing purposes. And it's like, that's fucked up. But is it fucked up in a way where you're fascinated with death, or is it fucked up in a way where you're fascinated with marketing your band so much that you're just gonna like take pictures of your dead friend? I don't know which one it is exactly, and I don't think anybody does, including, like, he's one of the people that ends up dead by the end of the movie, spoiler alert. So it's nobody ever will figure out what was going on in his head during all this, but you kind of get the impression that, like, he ends up being the guy that's like, this was supposed to be fun, and it's, he accidentally got other people to take it way too seriously. So it's pretty fucked up. Yeah. I'd recommend the movie if, like I say, if you're curious about that sort of thing. And if you have curiosity about it, like I said, there's podcasts and books about it and stuff. Whatever however you like to learn about things, I'd look into it, because it's kind of a fascinating story. I mean, not fascinating in necessarily a good way. Only other thing I watched was, for some reason that I'm still not sure, I decided I'd sit down for like 3 straight hours and watch the entire run of Afterlife, which is the new Ricky Gervais Netflix thing. And I don't know, maybe I liked it or maybe I didn't. I'm honestly not sure.
Still don't know.
It's so, the concept is,
would you have liked it if it wasn't Ricky Gervais doing it?
I don't. Well, it couldn't not be Ricky Gervais. He's like the writer, director, and star. And he, one of the things that I found weird about it is that he does stick some of his own typical stuff into it. So, like, the concept is about this this guy, and his wife has died, and he's just depressed, and he's gonna kill himself, but he doesn't, because he then there'd be nobody to take care of his dog. So instead, he's just decided, fuck it, I'll just live. But since I have nothing to live for, I can just be however much of an asshole I feel like being. And in the beginning, there's like some funny things where he's just being this super huge asshole, and that's where the humor comes from. But overall, it tends to take a much more serious tone to it. Like I say, it's Ricky Gervais. He's not a great actor. He does a pretty good job doing some of the emotional stuff, but he is essentially playing himself. I thought that there... So the idea, of course, like you can predict, he's goes from like wanting to kill himself at the beginning, and he cheers up at the end and finds out there is stuff to live for. Like, surprise, surprise, everyone knows that's where it's headed, right? I don't think that arc is handled necessarily great. I think that it sort of just is an immediate turn towards the end. Like, oh shit, we're getting to the end of the runtime of this. We better have him cheer up a little bit. Which is kind of a missed thing. But overall, I don't know. Like, again, I still don't know if I liked it or not. There's a very humorous through thread. Like, he works for like a small local paper. And so like every episode or so, he has to like go out and interview somebody that is, for the most of them, they don't play a major part in the story. It's just some wacky person he has to interview, and I find most of those to be pretty funny. But then you get back to the more serious stuff, and like I say, it's pretty predictable. Kind of hits all the tropes. But then again, I sat and watched it start to finish in one night, so I must have enjoyed it enough to do that.
Couldn't have been that bad.
I have no idea what my review of this is. You guys asked, what did I watch? I have no idea if I recommend people watch it or not, but I don't know. It's on Netflix. It's free.
It's like, I watched it. That's my review.
It's my review. I don't know. Like I say, Ricky Gervais is a better actor than I expected him to be, but then again, he just plays himself, so I'm not sure how much of an accomplishment that is. I did find it weird that he edited, like, his, you know, how he's big on like atheism. If you know that or not, but he is, and he edits in some of the arguments that he's made publicly about that in the past into this character saying them, and I'm like, well, that's weird. Like, it doesn't seem necessarily relevant to the plot. Like, you're just gonna throw this weird anti-religion message in here because you want to. But okay,
sure, why not?
Yeah, so I don't know. If you want to watch it, watch it. If you don't. That's my advice with regards to that.
Controversial stance from Doug.
Yeah. And really, that's all I watched this week, so.
It's going to be a short episode.
Yeah. I mean, I also tried to watch a movie called Shimmer Lake, because I thought it was going to be a nice, like, lighthearted thing that I could have on in the background, but it turns out to be one of those movies that's told in, like, reverse order. Mm. And I couldn't follow it enough to tell you what it's about, because I was trying to use it as a background movie, and it when you do that type of storytelling, it doesn't work as a background movie. You kind of have to pay attention. So I will make no comments on it.
I only watched two things. Neither one of them are really worth getting too deep into on this show. I watched Bohemian Rhapsody, which I enjoyed. But then the problem is, if you go read about all the stuff depicted in the movie, you find out about 50% of it's made up.
But isn't it one of those ones where the executive producers are the surviving members of the band?
Yeah.
Therefore, none of those guys do anything wrong in the movie, and they're all heroes, and their best friend is...
No, well, I mean, I guess, but they make up conflict in the movie when there was no conflict in real life. Like, there's a point where he's kind of, his assistant, who was also his boyfriend at the time, Freddie Mercury, is trying to talk him into going solo and has this deal like on the table from CBS Records and stuff. And he's like, he doesn't really want to do it because, you know, he loves the band. But the band's kind of been getting a little dysfunctional lately. And he ends up just like saying that he's going to go solo. and they throw like the biggest, like angry sort of fight about it. And then they act like they don't talk for a couple years, and then they reunite for this Live Aid concert, which of course is the big culmination of the thing. So you go read about it, and pretty much everybody in that band had their own solo project from when the band started to whenever they stopped touring. And then the other thing is they were on tour like 8 weeks before the Live Aid concert.
I was going to say, I knew that part.
So there was no like problem with him doing solo albums and like them having a big like blow up, like to the point they weren't talking to each other. Like that, none of that stuff ever happened. It was completely manufactured for the movie. So it's just stuff like that. That's just like, I mean, I guess they needed something for the movie, but it was weird to just make up like this big incident between everybody when it didn't really happen. But
yeah,
I don't know.
Whatever. That's the thing, for me, it's like if you're going to make a biopic, if it's not going to be realistic, I don't know if I understand the point of it.
Yeah.
But then again, I find, like, if you're going to make a realistic biopic, how many people's lives are interesting enough to make a biopic about?
Mm-hmm. And you would think Freddie Mercury would be the one that would be interesting enough.
And if you're going to make a biopic, why don't you just make a fucking documentary? Like, documentary better than biopic.
Yeah.
But, I mean, biopics tend to be more entertaining.
Yeah. Especially they do better. They do better at the box office.
I don't usually particularly like them.
What's his name? Rami something or another. The guy who played Freddie Mercury, he did an awesome job.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed the movie. Like I said, it's just don't go in for a truthful telling of the life of the band and whatnot. But
yeah. At least your complaints are about things that are like factually incorrect. Mm-hmm. But whenever you go online, the biggest thing you see people screaming about are like timeline inconsistencies where they're like, when that album came out, he didn't have a mustache.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay.
If I was a huge fan of the band, that would stuff drive me nuts too, though. That would be like if Queen was my thing, like that, like if I grew up listening to Queen and then they made the movie and it was like that, that would kill me.
Mm.
As it stands, I'm just going to not watch the movie because I don't have that much interest in it. But
yeah. Well, like I said, the movie is good. It's just a good movie. It's not a good representation of the truth.
I'm super glad that it got made because it resulted in Wayne and Garth getting back together for one night only to introduce them at the Oscars or something. I assume it was the Oscars, but I don't even know if that's
Mike Myers is in the movie.
Oh, that explains.
It's one of those that's just like, I don't know if somebody thought this through properly. So Mike Myers is in it, and he's like the head of the whatever record company they're working with at the time. And it's when they do Bohemian Rhapsody. And okay. So they bring it to him and they say like, okay, this is our new masterpiece and we want this to be the single. And then everybody in the band's like, yeah, this is what we want to do. And he says, well, the problem is it's 6 minutes. You're not going to get played on the radio with a song that's 6 minutes long. Like 3 minutes is the sort of the sweet spot. And they keep arguing about it back and forth. And then it's one of those moments that you're just like, so you cast Mike Myers in this movie just for this moment where he tells them it's not going to be good for a single because he doesn't think kids will be riding around in their car with it turned up banging their heads. And you kind of have that wah, wah, like moment.
Doesn't seem like the movie should have wah, wah moments in it though.
No. And then they end up quitting that record company and whatever. don't know. It is what it is. The Live Aid stuff was cool because they pretty much do the entire Live Aid performance like in the movie, which is good.
But so my comment on that would be, can't you just go on YouTube and watch
the Live Aid totally.
So to me, I would do that.
But also as a filmmaker, it's interesting to watch the Live Aid performance and then watch the movie version and see how well they did, like, getting it as exact as possible.
Yeah.
You've not
sold me on this movie.
No, that's fine.
That's not your fault, though.
Like I said, it's not, I mean, it's not even, we've talked about it way more than I had even planned on talking about.
Well, nobody else watched anything, so.
True. So yeah, I mean, it's okay. It's, if you're into that kind of movie, you'd probably enjoy it. I'm actually kind of looking forward to the Elton John one that's coming up, because they label it as a true life fantasy. And from the trailer, they're going to have weird aspects in the movie that I think is going to be very cinematic, that you could just watch it and be like, oh, okay, yeah. They're having fun with sort of this whole thing, and they're not saying it's a biopic, but that it's based on Elton John's life, but it has all these fantastical elements thrown into it to just as an excuse to play all of his music and have very cool, like, visual scenes and whatnot. So, should be interesting.
I probably won't see that either.
That's fine. You can watch your Norwegian death metal documentaries.
It wasn't a documentary, was it?
Or movies.
Yeah.
That's fine. The other thing I watched was Captain Marvel, which is another movie we probably don't really need to go too far into.
I have not seen it yet, so.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. Like, it's good. It's not amazing. You just kind of watch it, and it kind of goes exactly how you think it's going to go.
Okay.
Which is fine, but, I mean, you know. It's another origin movie, which kind of gets old after, like, the 10th one from Marvel.
Yeah. How is the character? Is it someone that they're going to be able to rely on heavily for future movies?
You mean as far as, like, sort of being like the new face of the franchise,
or one of the new faces?
I don't know. I definitely was not as emotionally invested in it as I have been in some of the other movies. I don't know. It pretty much played it safe and just sort of goes beat by beat exactly how you think it's going to. Yeah. I mean, if you really want to see it, go see it. But it's not like it's probably middle tier of the Marvel movies. It's not, you know, super great. It's not one of the worst. It's just sort of in the middle.
I haven't got to see it yet, and it's stressing me out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's bugging me too. But, well, what's bugging me the most is that now there's, like, the new Avengers trailer and stuff, and I'm like, I don't want to watch any of it.
Oh. You can watch it without watching the Captain Marvel. Yeah. It doesn't really give anything away.
I went to go see it over the weekend, and I there was literally only one showing that I had time to go see. Mm-hmm. And me and Char went down to the theater that has assigned seating and the good seats and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we got there a good solid 45 minutes to an hour early, because I was like, you know, it's going to be busy. It's the first weekend, but it's a Sunday daytime show, so it shouldn't be that bad. And the theater, because of the assigned seating, still had about 20 seats open, and no two were next to each other because of fucking assholes spacing out their stupid seats with the assigned seating.
Mm.
I hate that shit.
Gotcha. That's why you should have went on Thursday night.
I should have, but it's hard to do during the week because I feel bad putting my doggy in the pen after he's been in the pen all day.
Mm. That's why I have a doggy that doesn't go in a pen like mine.
That little motherfucker, He ate one of my shoes today. It's the first thing he's ever. It's the first thing he's destroyed since we got him. He's never ever picked up or chewed on anything he wasn't supposed to. And today we're sitting there watching a movie and we hear this weird noise and look underneath the coffee table and he's got one of my shoes and he's totally chewed the toe out of it.
That sounds like a good time. So without saying what it is, no spoilers, I am saying it's probably the greatest Stan Lee cameo so far.
I've heard that from others as well.
So be ready to be excited when you see it. And maybe you'll come back and be like, it wasn't that great. But I had a great time with it.
Yeah.
I've just been assuming for some reason it's going to be de-aged Stan Lee.
It's not.
Good.
But you'll see.
I'm looking forward to the movie. I'm a little worried that the Marvel films are getting Disneyfied at this point. They are going to all be this middle of the ground, middle of the road kind of thing. Mm-hmm. None of them will be great anymore because they won't swing for the fences the way they have in the past.
Yeah. But
we'll see. I mean, Avengers is coming next, and it's certainly, it's like this 3-hour epic that starts with half the characters dead, so it's not going to be your typical movie, regardless of what else happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be interesting, that's for sure. We're only like a month away from that, which has me excited.
I know.
So, yeah, I mean, like I said, middle tier, if you really want to see it, you'll probably enjoy it. Just, you know, it's not the super great Marvel sometimes we get, but not the super worst either, so I don't know.
That's good.
Yeah. Part of it maybe, since it takes place in the 90s, that we're just kind of like, oh, okay, well, I mean, obviously half the world didn't blow up or anything, so whatever happens couldn't be that bad.
I mean, I guess there's that element. I'm kind of excited for the 90s aspect of it. Does it play in at all?
It has a pretty fantastic soundtrack.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all 90s music, so.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. Trying to think if there's any other sort of like, 90s. She does steal some clothes from like a shop to disguise herself. And of course, it's a Nine Inch Nails shirt, jeans, and a flannel tied around her waist.
Nice.
Here's a brief glimpse of some of the truly fine pictures we've scheduled in the near future.
Noah, why don't you tell us what you picked for next week's episode?
I didn't pick shit.
Fuck. Doug, why don't you tell us what you picked for next week's episode?
Well, I can see why you're confused, because next week we're going to be discussing Deadly Prey, which is clearly a Noah movie. I'm not sure how come I picked it.
You were tricked.
I was tricked because we're teaming it up with Surviving the Game, which has got Gary Busey in it and therefore must be good. So basically those are both humans hunting humans type movies.
We could have done Hard Target.
You know what? Hard Target does not hold up. You're better off just remembering Hard Target.
No, I know it doesn't. I watched it a couple years ago and was like, wow.
It really, John Woo movies from that period were, I don't know what the word is for them, but like they were way too art housey to be action movies, but they were way too action movies to be considered art, and it's just weird.
Mm. Yeah.
So, plus that mullet that Van Damme wears in that movie. It's like, I don't know, man. And when he finds his like uncle and his uncle's doing that fake Cajun accent. Oh, wow, there's a lot wrong with Hard Target now that I think about it.
Wasn't it Wilford Brimley? Isn't that?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. I mean, when you say, okay, we're going to do this action movie, it's humans hunting humans. We got Jean-Claude Van Damme being hunted by Lance Henriksen. And Jean-Claude Van Damme goes and hides with Wilford Brimley. I'm like, that doesn't seem like you could screw that up, but they did. And not that, I won't even say they screwed it up. They just made a movie that was very of its time.
Yeah.
So hopefully Surviving the Game holds up much, much better. It has Ice-T in it, and we know that he is timeless, right? So
yeah.
It is Ice-T, right? It's not one of the other Ices. I get them
confused. Vanilla Ice or Ice Cube?
I get Ice-T and Ice Cube confused.
Oh, we need a movie with Ice in the title that stars Vanilla Ice, Ice-T, and Ice Cube together. It'd be the team-up movie we've all been waiting for.
Yeah, I don't see how that could go wrong. So did you guys open your Facebook when other people were talking during our recording and notice that there's headlines going around that Johnny Depp is apparently has proof that he was the one being abused by Amber Heard and not the other way around?
Oh, no.
That's according to headlines that I'm reading. And this is fascinating to me. She apparently may have chopped off one of his fingers most of the way.
What? Oh, no. I'm still not seeing that. Unfortunately, I'm getting headlines of another mass shooting in New Zealand at a mosque.
Yeah.
Which is bad.
It's probably two mosques, actually. But that's not fun. It's not the type of horrible, violent storytelling that's fun.
Oh, from the reliable Geo.TV. Johnny Depp was abused by ex-wife. New evidence shows.
I have no idea if Geo.TV is reliable or not.
Depp is suing her for $50 million for defamation?
I assume that would be the money he lost by getting kicked off the Pirates movie.
Probably. And I think he almost got booted off the Fantastic Beasts movie.
Yeah.
Weird. Are we going to find out that Johnny Depp is actually a hero in this whole situation and we just never knew?
I almost think it's worth it just so that we can finally learn the lesson to stop judging all these stupid celebrity things, like jumping to these ridiculous conclusions.
I would agree.
Because like we just had it with that, whatever that actor is that faked being beaten up.
Yeah.
And now there's like that white supremacist guy that's faking being threatened. And if Johnny Depp turns out he shouldn't have gotten all the shit he got, maybe we'll finally stop.
Nah, we'll keep going.
Yeah.
Yeah, but all it does is, the problem with this kind of stuff is all it does is steal credit from the people who are actually reporting real.
Yeah, oh yeah, like for sure. Like, that's why you shouldn't fake being an abuse victim. Like, assuming this story is remotely true and Johnny Depp is saying all these things in court, then we have at least one person fakely reporting abuse, which is tragic because it really seriously hurts all the real abuse victims out there that don't get taken as seriously because whichever one of them is doing it is a terrible person. And the other one is probably also a terrible person.
People just need to exercise a little bit of skepticism and it's all fine.
Yeah.
Somebody says something, the proper response is we should investigate that and find out if that's true. It's not fucking burn the person and then find out if it's true.
Yeah.
I know. I mean, Aunt Becky was just trying to get her kids into a good college and she's being demonized for
fuck.
The funniest thing, I've seen a bunch of people arguing and they're like, so they're all getting arrested for doing the same thing that basically rich legacy kids have always done and is perfectly legal.
No. Rich legacy kids directly bribe their way into the school. These guys, if you read up on it, like I think Aunt Becky like got her kid in on a water polo scholarship and there's like proof of emails of her going, my kid won't ever actually have to play water polo, will she? No, don't worry. Just Photoshop her head onto this body of a water polo person and send us a picture so that we can claim she's good at water polo. It's priceless.
Mm.
Those legacy kids never did anything clever like that. Never pretended to be good at a sport they never played before.
Plus, they're all probably pretty wicked awesome at water polo. Because that seems like something some rich little douche would do.
Well, that's the hilarious thing about this whole thing to me, and I don't know how the hell we're on this now, but so if you're rich enough to bribe your kid to get into school, kid doesn't need to go to school that badly.
No.
Like, if your dad's William H. Macy, you don't really need to go to college to get a good job. You could just live off dad's money the rest of your life. So just give them the money and let them go live off of that rather than bribing their way into school.
Well, I think there's probably some weird backwards logic that if they go to school, if we at least get them in and they go to school and do a good job, they'll feel like they earned something. So then they won't be one of those rich asshole kids that feels like they deserve everything to be given to them. I'm not saying that that's actually what happens. I'm just saying that maybe that's what their backwards way of thinking, of why they're doing it.
Yeah, my advice to celebrities is if you have like $500,000 and you're thinking about bribing your kid's way into school, tell them to go to the whatever shitty school they can get into and then just give them the money to start their life with and they'll probably be fine. Like if you have an education from a state college and $500,000, you probably end up all right. You know what I mean? Like you're off to a better start than most people who have just the education from an Ivy League school.
You could just be a good person. Maybe that would be good enough. Like I've heard Bryan Cranston talk that whenever he's up for awards or whatever, they'll usually send like a limo to his house to pick him up. So he'll take his kids with him and stuff, but he reassures them, like, this is a special limo ride. This is not something that we're ever going to do, like, every day. And just basically points out that all this superficial bullshit doesn't really mean anything. And not to expect to live that life, like, every day. Which I think is good.
Yeah.
He hops on his golden helicopter and flies away.
Yeah, but you kids don't get a golden helicopter. I earned it. I tended to cook meth for years to get this golden helicopter.
To switch to something good, I guess. Did anybody see the trailer for the Batman versus Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie that's coming out?
I did not either.
Yeah, they're doing.
I didn't know there was a trailer. If I'd known there was a trailer, I definitely would have watched it.
Yeah, they're doing an animated movie where they Batman versus Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which I'm assuming is based off the comic book that came out like last year, a couple years ago. But it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. Shows like the Shredder teaming up with Ra's al Ghul to take over Gotham City and stuff. And
are they cartoon turtles or are they dark comic booky turtles?
They're cartoon turtles.
Okay.
But not like the goofy ones. Kind of an in-between. They're not like the Archie, like the, you know, 90s cartoon. They're a little bit more updated, but they're not super dark and serious either. Oh, looks like it's gonna be
fun. Awesome. I gotta watch that. So,
so we should probably sign off so you can watch it.
Yeah, can we end the podcast now so I can go watch that thing that you just told me to watch?
Please remember to replace the speaker on the post when you leave the theater.
And now, folks, it's time to say goodnight. We sincerely appreciate your patronage and hope we've succeeded in bringing you an enjoyable evening of entertainment. Please drive home carefully and come back again soon. Good night.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.